You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I am your host of Locked On Bills. Today's episode is brought to you by Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is a refreshment you need to power through game day because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi is made for football watching. Happy Thursday to you. As I mentioned, today we have a special guest that is none other than Greg Thompson, the host of the Cover One Buffalo podcast. And very excited to talk to Greg today, talking about some stuff that I'm not always super comfortable getting into. Salary cap, contracts. I can talk about it, but I'll be honest with you. Before I do, I usually check with Greg. I'm in his DMs all the time being like, hey, man, does this make sense? Is this right? And I think that's important because you don't have to always know the answers. You just need to know where to get them. And so I figured we go straight to the source. Greg's good at contract, salary cap, big picture resources. We're going to have that conversation. And one other thing before I formally welcome Greg to this show, I got to say, this man does something very brave, and that is put on an immediate reaction show to Buffalo Bills games. And let me just tell you how much respect I have for doing that, because I do my Monday show, and that gives me probably 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours of prep time before I actually hit record, edit it, and make sure it looks and sounds the way I want it to for the people the next day. Greg and Aaron just dive right in, right after the game, ready to face the bullets and talk. So Greg, you're an animal. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's cathartic, and it forces you to have a really strong structure. I'm taking notes. I have templates during the game. I have like four different screens going, and it forces me to really be focused on the different points I know we're going to talk about. But I can't lie, after games like Sunday, it's a little tough to really be zeroed in and focused. It was just mind-blowing there. So I know that's not the topic today, but those are not the easiest ones to go live immediately after.
Let's just go to it. Let's just talk about it. When that catch is made, what was it like where you were watching the game? Because where I was, it was just like there wasn't any noise. You're just watching, and it's just like life sucked out of the room.
I was just staring, looking for the ball on the ground. I was so dumbfounded for, obviously not that long, but for a full second or two, just going, he didn't catch that. That can't be what happened here. And just looking through, like, oh my gosh, he caught the ball. It was just complete, flabbergasted, in every sense of the word. I was just lost.
Well, we're not going to spend any more time, honestly, talking about that. But before we kind of get into this big picture conversation, that's kind of what I'm billing this discussion as today, I think we got to talk about your feelings. Like, how do you feel about the 2020 version of the Buffalo Bills? I kind of like to get your worst case, your most likely and best case scenario as to where this thing finishes when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I like that approach, and I think it forced me to kind of step back and be like, okay, let's be honest with ourselves here. So I looked at it, I'll kind of go in reverse. I would say right now, if you look at the remaining games, the Bills are going to be favored in four, maybe five out of those six. So I'm going to say the worst case is that they go 3-3, but the Dolphins stay hot, and one of those losses is the Dolphins at the end of the season, and they are one and done in the playoffs, maybe even on the road. So I don't think that's likely. I think that that's the worst case scenario, is that they make the playoffs, but that they get knocked out because they lose in the first round and might not even host a playoff game or win the division. I think the most likely is that they win four out of the remaining six, end up going 11-5, win the division, host a home playoff game, win a playoff game, and probably get eliminated in the divisional round to the Chiefs, something like that. I think that's the most likely. The crazy part is as I went through here, I kept looking through, say, best case scenario, and I kept, you know, initially doing it. They're like, well, the best case scenario is probably that they get the right path and that they lose to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game and win a couple playoff games. You get two wins and some experience. But I mean, the best case scenario is they win the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Like that's not hyperbole or outlandish. Right. Like I don't think it's likely, but the best case scenario is the Bills win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And that's not even like a stupid thing to say. You know, I really believe that. I mean, I think that there are teams that are better than the Buffalo Bills, but yes, there's not a team that the Buffalo Bills can't beat.
Correct.
So that feels good to say in the year 2020.
I even made the case that I think you can make the argument they have as good a shot at upsetting Kansas City as any other team. I think that the structure and the way that they're set up and the way that they can go shot for shot with them points-wise, I don't think anyone is shutting down the Chiefs. And I think you're going to have some playmakers on defense and an offense that can go shot for shot with them. And that, yeah, if we play them 10 times, they're probably going to win 7 or 8 of them. But it's not 10. They can hang with them and do that. So as crazy as it sounds, the best case scenario is the Buffalo Bills are the 2020 Super Bowl champions.
Very reasonable forecast on all levels, in my opinion there, Greg. So based on what you've learned about this team so far in 2020 and really not yet getting into the how, what do you think the most important areas of the team for Brandon Bean to address are this offseason?
Okay, so I think that it's in a couple spots on each side of the ball. Obviously, we've shown gaps in both the linebacker and cornerback depth. Obviously an upgrade would be great, but at minimum, some youth, some speed, some dependability at linebacker and cornerback. And I would say on offense, we've obviously seen, we probably don't have as much upside as we hoped at tight end. And I think that, yeah, you've been very adamant about this. I think that we've shown that not having explosiveness, speed, or the threat to the defense out of the backfield is probably a hindrance. Like that would be a versatile weapon worth having. So those would be the areas that I would initially focus on or think are the most important areas to address.
I want to take a minute to expand on this running back thing and not having much foot fire and speed out of the backfield. And on Herd Mentality yesterday on this podcast, Locked On Bills, I talked about some of the disappointment in Zach Moss and Devin Singletary. And of course, I reminded everybody that they're very slow running backs. And so I talked about design issues with the run game, and I talked about run blocking being a bit of an issue and the makeup of the running backs being an issue. But one thing that I also wish I would have said at the time, and I'm going to take the opportunity now to say, is that it's not just that they don't have perimeter threats and real challenges for defenses to deal with off tackle. I mentioned yesterday that they're not winning after contact. Right now, out of all the running backs that have at least 40 carries so far this league, in the league this year, Zach Moss is 39th in yards after contact. Devin Singletary is 29th. I mean, that's very low. You're not even giving them favorable opportunities to break tackles because they're running straight. Like, they're running between the tackles. Those are the hardest ones to break when guys are coming at you square downhill. So because of all these things working together, that even is inhibiting what those guys actually do well, and that's break tackles. So I'm not pounding the table for like Travis Etienne in the first round, but the makeup here has to be a little bit different. There needs to be a speed dynamic.
Yeah, I was on another show recently, and they had asked about who the best running back in the NFL was, and I said that, you know, the usage and the coaching style for a Dalvin Cook or a Derrick Henry makes it hard for people not to see that. I said, but if you're asking me, my prism that I judge that through is, if I could pick any player to add to the Buffalo Bills, who would I add? Can you imagine giving Josh Allen Alvin Kamara? Like, can you imagine what that would do to just the threat that they pose to defenses? And when you're choosing, you know, the two of them rolling out and that you have to choose to come up and get Josh, or if you take two steps, Kamara's past you, and just that kind of threat that would potentially exist. I want that danger to be added to the defense coordinator's mind.
I think Alvin Kamara would have caught that screen pass early in that Cardinals game that Singletary mishandled, and he had a convoy of blockers. Oh, I mean, he was going to walk in for a touchdown. He didn't catch the ball. And you can get that in the second round. Like, you don't have to, that doesn't, I'm not saying first round running back, because people might be listening to this and saying, well, Joe, you've been telling us about first round running backs and not paying running backs. You can have your cake and eat it too with this discussion. You can, Alvin Kamara, a second round pick, Joe Mixon, second round pick, Dalvin Cook, second round pick. Like, you can have your cake and eat it too when it comes to these types of dynamics out of the backfield.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll get to it in other positions, and we'll talk about it this offseason. You know, you and Bruce and others in our little circles here, you know, just because you can put together a spunky, fiery, you know, cornerback group without athleticism doesn't mean you're not allowed to have elite athletes. So I like Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. Just because you can put together a good backfield without elite athleticism doesn't mean you're not allowed to have an elite athlete. Like, by all means, sprinkle some of those in there.
So, Greg, as we start to look forward here, building this team, resources, all that stuff, talk to us about resources. What do the Bills have when it comes to cap space today? How much cap space do they have entering the offseason? And then what type of draft capital do the Buffalo Bills have?
So, I use many of the same resources others do, and talk to guys like Mike over at SpotTrack and Jason and Brad and guys over at Over the Cap. When you get mid-season, things get a little hinky. So one site has 2.9, one has 3.2. I'm going to say $3 million, depending on exactly what you count with the call-ups and drawbacks and the game checks and all the things that go. So about $3 million right now. And next year, with no other moves made, about $5 million. And there's not a ton of space there. So we'll get into that later on about how you can do that. And then there's a pretty standard draft haul. So all seven picks, but the seven picks are no fourth and an extra fifth because we gave up the fourth for Stephon Diggs, and we have the extra fifth because of Zay Jones. So still have the full cadre of picks, but not in the exact order they normally would have been, which I brought that up when it came up with some of the draft deadline deal or trade deadline deals, that was maybe something you could have seen with that extra fifth that could have been moved.
I'm going to bang a drum this offseason, and I'll go ahead and give you a little bit of a tease. I am trade back when it comes to the Bills and draft capital. And I think what we're going to talk about the rest of the way here will give me a really solid foundation to stand on to say that. But the Bills are at the point now where they need low-cost players filling valuable roles. And, I mean, I'm talking about trading out of the first round completely and really stockpiling third and fourth round picks, because this team is at a different point of its life cycle. And early on, Brandon Bean was identifying these pillars that he wanted to go get, and he moved up a ton. Last year, he was chalk. He made the picks where they were supposed to be made. I think next year is where you start to play the game a little bit, trade back, trust your scouting intel, and your process for developing and acclimating players, and get yourself some more darts to throw at the board, because you are going to need to fill out this roster.
100%.
This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. I love to watch football games with my family in the living room, and you can be confident we all have a cold, refreshing Pepsi in our hands. Pepsi is a refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. All right, Greg, I want to get into the pending free agents that the Buffalo Bills have and really focus on the unrestricted free agents. So everybody listen in here. I'm going to read you the list of free agents that the Bills have to deal with before we kind of get into the discussion. So stick with me here. Trent Murphy, Tyler Croft, Josh Norman, Ty Insecki, John Feliciano, Brian Winters, Andre Roberts, Darrel Williams, Matt Barkley, Tywan Jones, we're not done, TJ Yeldon, Dean Marlowe, Isaiah McKenzie, Darren Lee, Darrell Worley, and then the big one, Matt Milano. So, Greg, so that's a long list.
It is
a long list of free agents that the Bills have to make decisions on. And we're talking starters, key backups, really important role players. If you were to kind of take this list of players and put them into buckets of let them go, bring back if it's reasonable, and then must bring back, you got to have this guy back, how do you kind of work through this and classify them?
So when you're looking at lists like this, obviously you get into a couple different factors. You have positional value, you have age, and you have production. And they're all different parts of that equation. So the age is a big piece for me. As you said, we're progressing. We're getting into a new phase for this franchise as a build. So my let go list is a little bit longer. And I have Trent Murphy, Josh Norman, Ty Insecki, Brian Winters, Matt Barkley, TJ Yeldon, Darren Lee, and Daryl Worley. All of them are either where I genuinely don't need them back, just because I'm even at a minimum contract, I don't think that they're a needle moving player, or I think they're going to want enough more that it's not in the cards for what I'll explain in a bit, that they're just not going to have that mid-tier price range available anymore. The if reasonable bucket, I have Tyler Kroft, Andre Roberts, Tywan Jones, Dean Marlowe, and Isaiah McKenzie. The reason that I have those five names is because I don't know that it's out of the question that all five of them may be in a bucket of players that we've never seen before in the NFL that more than any other year are all going to be clamoring for that veteran minimum benefit where you get to get paid more than the minimum and you get 900,000 or a million or just over a million, but you only count the minimum like a rookie scale contract against there. The Bills only had one player like that this past year. We had a lot of those mid-tier $2 to $3 million guys. I think that market is going to be virtually eliminated in 2021 because of all the cap restriction. And either you're going to be good enough to get a real contract or you're going to be begging for a job. And there's going to be a ton of guys all of a sudden who don't believe that, think they're going to get the deal they think they want, and are going to be looking for contracts September 15th going into week two because you couldn't get a deal going into the year. So I pick those guys thinking that I think they're possibly ones who will read the writing on the wall and be like, hey, I'll try my luck again in 2022. Let's stick with the team that I know, and I'll take the little bit extra money I can and roll with it, which leaves John Feliciano, Daryl Williams, and Matt Milano as my must-haves.
I thought that's where we would get with the must-haves. I mean, you're talking about an impact linebacker. Daryl Williams has been lights out at right tackle.
And I made the case of the best value in football right now at $2.25 million.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, especially you see, what, five offensive tackles go in the first round? I mean, these guys, everybody wants an offensive tackle just like Daryl Williams, and he's healthy now, and he's playing at a high level. He obviously fits. And then, of course, John Feliciano, who I think we've appreciated at a high level seeing his return to the lineup this year and how different things look with him in it and without it. We haven't even seen him play next to Morse yet this year. So, I mean, that's still to come. Okay, so that's more than $5 million that you told me that we have in salary cap space. Before we get there, because you said something fascinating that I want to follow up on before we get into how the heck you bring these guys back and you sign your draft class and you do something else to add to your roster, because you're talking about a lot of potential holes here. We know that this is a really weird year when it comes to salary cap. It's going down to potentially $175 million in space for teams to work with. And, you know, not only is that challenging, but when you think about the way Brandon Bean probably mapped things out to this point, really a steep contrast between what he thought he was going to have at this point in the build and what
everyone expected. Everybody expected another 10 to 12 million on top of what was there, let alone 25 back. But this is probably a $35 to $37 million gap from where a meticulous, detail-oriented, disciplined guy like Brandon Bean planned on his budget being. So everybody at home, think about how much money you and your spouse and your family makes, and then figure out that, oh, next year we're going to be making probably 20% less than that. And all of a sudden, you just have to figure out how to pay your bills.
How do you think this shapes this offseason? Because, Greg, you and I both know the last thing that the NFL and the NFLPA wants is a bunch of really good football players that aren't getting the contracts that they probably should. But at the same time, there's only so much money to go around. I mean, how weird is this going to look? You kind of mentioned it. You're probably going to see a bunch of players that deserve to get paid, but well, that's still only a small percentage of the players that have expiring deals. I mean, what is this going to look like based on what you can estimate right now?
So there's a couple different things. One, you hear a lot of people throw around the, oh, well, it's at a minimum 175, and don't worry, that's the worst it can be, and throwing out there that, well, it could be much more than that. I want to caution people, you're not seeing fans in the stands. They already planned on all the TV money. They already planned on all the ad money. They already planned on all the other supplemental, you know, routes of revenue. The gap that could have been made up on top of there would have been fans in the stands. The issue is all the projections were this could have been a $40, $50, $60 million gap. The agreement they made for the floor at 175 was to avoid the true nuclear winter, where, I mean, literally there would have been teams like the Falcons, the Saints, the Cowboys that could not have fielded a roster. It would have caused, like, literally the equation of dead cap to available funds. They could not have fielded a 53-man roster. I think it is very unlikely that it goes above that minimum. I think that very much so they're going to be borrowing from the future years to pay back the gap between the real floor and the false floor they set at 175. So we'll find that out as the season goes. But any fans planning on, hey, maybe it's going to be above there, I would not plan on that.
So
when you go ahead.
No, finish your thought, please.
So when you go into that, all of a sudden you're going to have, you had this in the NBA at one point before the huge money was kicking in. It was the opposite problem. It was not even opposite. We know that new TV deals are coming in. Guys like Jeff Bezos and other people are going to throw money at the NFL with all kinds of new routes of income. I think that's likely as early as 2022, for sure 2023. So I think, like you saw in the NBA before, where they knew that new money was coming, you saw a ton of guys sign 1 and 2 year deals. I think that that's what you're going to see. Guys are still going to haggle and try to get the best 1 year deal they can, but you're going to have way fewer guys other than the upper echelon, your top 30 free agents around the league. Just about everybody else is going to try to take the 1 year deal they can and then be able to go back at it again.
So you've been very good at estimating contracts, and you identified the three players I thought you would: Matt Milano, John Feliciano, and Darrell Williams. So again, before we get into the how, we're going to get into the how this could all happen in our next segment. When you forecast what you think those guys are going to get paid, where do you sit with those three guys?
So the first two are a little bit easier. I think John Feliciano is a slight upgrade. Probably even slight is unfair, an upgrade over Quentin Spain. So I think we see a slight upgrade on his contract with maybe a little bit more guaranteed. Quentin Spain's look like a 3-year, $15 million deal. It was really a 1-year deal, and then we'll see. I think he gets a little bit more reassurance, but probably not a ton more money. So I have it at 3 years, $18 million, at $6 million a year. I wouldn't be shocked if he got $7 or $8 million, but I think, you know, we've seen what Trey White did. We've seen what these other contracts are. When guys re-sign, it's because they re-sign closer to the Bills number than maybe what the open market would be, because they want to stay. So I'm going to put him at 3 years, $18 million, and probably they can wiggle that a little bit lower than the $6 million number in 2020. Or 2021. Darrell Williams, I think, you know, last year we saw George Fant get $10 million a year, and we saw Brian Bulaga get $9 to $10 million a year, depending on how the bonuses shake out. I'm going to say 3 years, $27 million. I wouldn't be shocked again if that wiggled up closer to $10 or $11 million. But I think if he likes the situation and wants to stay and gets in that situation, I'm going to put that at $9 million a year, but 3 years, $27 million. By far the hardest is Matt Milano. I have no idea how the injury is going to be a factor. I'm confident it is. I don't know, does that mean just a lower percentage of guarantee? Does that mean a shorter term deal? Or the way I've actually come around to this is I had the whole time been closer to like 3 years, $39 million, around $13 million a year. I actually think the team is going to sell him on, they want some assurance of longer term structure with lower guarantee. So I right now have it at 4 years and $48 million. and that he gets some assurance, some things there, maybe some agreements that if he hits some snap count percentages, it guarantees some future deals so that, hey, you bet on yourself. And if you play a pretty healthy 2021 season, you get the deal you thought you were going to get. And if you don't, we're, you know, in a little bit better shape to be able to survive or move on if we need to, but we put it out there that both of us can be happy.
So, I mean, really, for those three players, we're talking 25-ish million to bring those three guys back. Again, before we've even talked about a draft class, which usually is $8, $9, $10 million to do that. And all those other players, right? I mean, you still have to have these other guys in these spots. I can't wait to get into our next conversation because you're gonna try to tell me how this is going to happen here in just a moment. All right, Greg, we got to have a tough conversation now. But before we get there, my dude, you're the host of the Cover One Buffalo podcast. Tell everybody where they can continue to follow your work and about your pod and when it drops and all that good stuff.
Yeah, come on over. Have fun. Always having fun on Twitter with Bills fans. You can find me at Greg Thompson over at CoverOne.net and on the Cover One app. And Aaron and I doing a show previewing each game every Wednesday night and then immediately following each game, regardless of when it happens. And we have fewer and fewer 1 p.m. games left, so some of those are going to be some late nights recording the coming up ones here. But yeah, come on over. Have fun. Find us at Cover One. And always trying to help, you know, Bills fans. I think Aaron is, you know, always there creating awesome graphics. Eric is much more in your realm and breaking down the film, understanding those guys. And I think I approach it from the roster construction, salary cap, CBA, and we try to pride ourselves on taking the complex parts of football and helping them be more digestible for the Bills fans.
Well, you know that I bug you for that type of stuff all the time. So that's why I'm nice to you, Greg. I need your information.
It's a good partnership. I like it.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. How are we doing this, Greg? How is this? Where's this money coming from? You told me $5 million going into next season. You told me that we need 25-ish to sign those three players, not to mention anything else. So what opportunities do the Bills have in terms of releasing players, keeping in mind that creates holes, or doing other things to create cap space, whether that's restructuring deals and stuff like that?
So there's a point that you touched on earlier that's key, and that is going to be the one that I mentioned on the veteran minimum benefit of getting vested veterans that are beyond 4 years who want to sign for the minimum to get a little bit extra money, but only count as the minimum. So as we're filling out the end of this roster, and I'll explain it here in a minute, it's going to be pretty thin once you get past those top three guys. You're going to need people to want to do that. You're also going to want as many cheap rookie contracts as possible, which actually gets into, you know, when you see the Patriots do it year after year after year, lots of other teams like the Saints, like the other teams in salary cap issues, you see them trade down. It's not an accident. It's because the closer you get to that $600,000, $700,000 number, I think a lot of fans have the perception of you just threw out a number. Sometimes it looks like a draft class can cost $5 to $10 million. Well, when you get down to where it's a bunch of third, pretty much anything third round or lower, those picks don't really count because the draft pick, the rookie contract, is just kicking out another minimum contract guy. And if you were going to pay that guy $650,000 or this rookie $650,000, it's still a 53-man roster spot in the top 51 equation of how they figure it out. So the more of those guys you can get, you actually can draft all of them without adding a net positive to it. Now, first round picks, second round picks, you're going to pay that difference. And top 10 picks, you pay a pretty significant difference. So when you see the how much the draft pick class costs, they just add up the seven picks and what their contract is and present it as a number like you're adding that to the salary cap. When in reality, it's, okay, which guy are you cutting and how much is the difference between that salary and the other rookie? So you, if you trade down a couple times, in theory, you can net out to where there's almost no cap impact of adding a draft class, or very likely last year, the Bills added maybe $2 million of net positive impact because they traded away the first round pick and then AJ Epinesa and getting into, I just drew a blank on our third round pick, Zach Moss, were the only two that had a net positive of the cap impact, and it was not that much. So those are some areas you can avoid a little bit. The biggest ones you have are four things you can do with contracts. So the first one is that everyone's aware of is just releasing people. So you cut a contract, you look for guys who have low guarantee or no guarantee with a zero dead cap or very low dead cap, and you just save all their salary. The only obvious one is Lee Smith. It's like $2.5 million. That's a pretty easy one for next year. I know he's beloved in the locker room. He's the kind of guy that I would see probably getting a similar offer to what like DeMarco did. Like, hey, we're going to reduce it. We'll bring you back at the minimum. And then if you make the roster, you'll get it, but no guarantees. There are three guys that I think are roster caliber, but probably making more than they would get on the open market. Their representation knows it, and Brandon Bean knows it. That's Tyler Medakevich, Vernon Butler, and AJ Klein. I think those are three players they can approach to say, hey, you guys don't want to go face this open market right now. You don't want to be go competing for a contract, but you're making more than we can afford. What if we bring you back at X? And they haggle with each of them, keep them on the roster, but chip off $1 million or $2 million for each of them, with Butler maybe $3 million back. Some things like that where, you know, not that they're all going to accept it. And the alternative is you release it. For a guy like Butler, if you release him, it's almost $5 million in cap space back to be able to move on. Then you get into cap-friendly extensions. So this is, do they already know that you're going to want another year after 2021 from Jerry Hughes, John Brown, or Micah Hyde? If you decide you want another year, maybe with Hyde, it might be two more years, you can do that extension now and kick some of that money down the road. Now, that's not a common Brandon Bean philosophy, but it is something where he's going to have to get into those in this coming year, because we don't have any alternatives to fill out the roster. That's going to be his only choice. He's going to have to make some difficult choices he hasn't before. So doing a cap-friendly extension, you can reduce, you know, for those guys, you're talking $9.9 and $8 million cap figures. You can easily bring that down to $4 or $5 million in 2021 and then give them some of that extra money back in 2022. Then you get into the moves that you see the Saints do every single year, the Bucks, the Rams, the Vikings, all these other teams, the contract restructure, where you go to the really highly paid guys and all of a sudden their $17 million salary becomes a $1 million salary and a prorated signing bonus. We actually only have three guys where that's really feasible, and you only want to do that with guys that you know you want to bring back for the life of their existing contract, because you're kicking the rest of that money down the road. So I wrote this prior to the concussion concerns, but Mitch Morse is one of those where if he's ready to play football and with us long term, that's nobody you're ever going to consider cutting. You're going to keep him as long as he plays. Stephon Diggs is another. That's actually a decent chunk of money for that one. And then Mario Addison, and that depends on where they feel about his contract. So not extending them, not giving them extra money, just giving them a bigger chunk of the cash up front to say, hey, let us kick some of this money down the road to what we were going to pay you anyways in 2022 and 2023. We'll give you the cash up front, but we'll kick it down the road. For each of those, you can free up another $3 or $4 million each by reducing their salary down really low in 2021 and kicking that signing bonus down into 2022 and 2023.
So you just gave us a wide range of things that the Bills can do to create cap space. And so when you factor all of these things together and say, well, if they do everything I just said, this much could be free, but on the low end, it could be this. Like, what type of range of cap space do you think that discussion just freed up?
So that's 10 moves that I rattled off there without the veteran minimum stuff and the draft pick stuff. That would create between 20 and 30 million. I projected at 25.
If all 10 of those things happen.
Correct.
So I think it would be unlikely that all 10 of those things happen.
I think that's fair. The bigger ones, I'll say that, you know, the bigger chunk of those, you could get to close to 15 to 18 million with just the top three or four. So that would create a pretty big chunk without needing to do all 10. But yeah, I would say 15 to 25 is more realistic, and you could even do 20 as a, hey, that would probably be on the aggressive side without every single one happening.
So you've outlined a course. And so now when we really start to think, okay, you don't have to say the Bills will sign these players and do these specific things, but getting ahead and looking down the road here, what are some of your realistic expectations for how Brandon Bean navigates this coming offseason? And Greg, I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but there's been some recent discussion about Josh Allen and his contract. So maybe kind of layer in Josh Allen and the fifth year option for Tremaine Edmonds and the possibilities there, and kind of give us an overview about what you think a realistic offseason could look like for Brandon Bean.
Sure. So the good news is, although you did rattle off a lot of names, and I think it is 25 players on the roster that are there, the core of the team is still back. And that, you know, you're talking about if you do all that, you know, maybe you're talking about needing your starting cornerback to be a battle between your second round pick and Levi Wallace. Maybe you're talking about your starting linebacker being a competition between your third round pick and AJ Klein. So you're probably not adding a flashy new piece somewhere, but you're probably bringing back what we just talked about is an 11-5 division champion team with plenty of young pieces coming back. So this is not a woe is me. This is now the reality of other good teams like the Saints and the Rams, and like, hey, we have a bunch of highly paid, talented people. How do we keep the band rolling? So I think that there's a pretty healthy chance to do that. The struggle is going to be now you're adding in more of those young players coming up. So there's good and bad news here. The good news is the decision on Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds for the fifth year option is due next spring. The money in the fifth year option is actually in 2022. Even beyond that, we just saw the Bills give Trey White his fifth year option plus his extension all at once. The Rams did that with Jared Goff. The Chiefs did that with Patrick Mahomes. So our friend Bruce and I just went back and forth a little bit on Twitter right before we recorded here, because in most cases, doing the fifth year option and the extension all at once means giving them a pretty good chunk of money and accelerating some of that cap hit, which the Bills cannot afford to do next spring. However, the Chiefs didn't do that. The Chiefs gave exercised Patrick Mahomes' fifth year option, gave him another 10 years on top of that for the crazy amount of money, but the amount doesn't matter. The structure is what matters here. Patrick Mahomes' cap number before the extension and after the extension are within $30,000 of each other. They just restructured it without increasing the cap hit at all and gave him the huge franchise quarterback contract. So I think a lot of people assume that, oh, we can't afford to extend Josh Allen because that's going to ruin Milano or Feliciano or Darrell Williams. That's not necessarily the case. If you know that he's going to be your franchise quarterback, you do what they did with Mahomes, even if it's for 4 or 5 years and not the 10-year craziness. And you just structure it in a way where, hey, we're going to give you all the money. We're going to guarantee all the years, 2023 through 2028 or whatever it is. But we're not going to get, and we're going to give you the signing bonus up front. We're just going to structure it that your salary might be $850,000, and then we'll give you the signing bonus. You still get your $10 million extra dollars this year, but it doesn't hurt the cap. So that is an option. They could do the same thing with Tremaine Edmonds. I would say, obviously, if they're choosing between the two, you probably just exercise the extension on Edmonds and you would extend Allen versus then negotiating with Edmonds the following year. But again, they can do both. They can extend both without jeopardizing the cap. They would be uncharacteristic for what we've seen for Brandon Bean to this point. But I'll say we haven't seen Brandon Bean be a GM of a mature competing division champion roster where he has to do these things. So I don't know that we have a track record of deciding, well, that's not how he operates. We don't know how he operates in this mode. We're about to find out.
All right. So the last thing I want to get to here is people probably listened to this entire podcast and said, thanks for all the information. Really appreciate it. But the salary cap's a myth. I see teams do this all the time. They keep their players. They give them big deals. They still bring in other players. And I don't care about these numbers. They're just numbers. They're not real. Greg, is the salary cap a myth? And what would you say to people that that think that?
So it is 100% not a myth. However, like that friend you had in your early 20s that always seemed to be able to pick up the tab and had the really nice apartment and the nice car and the nice clothes, and you didn't really understand how, you can play a lot of games with credit cards and short-term loans and kick a lot of stuff down the road. I promise you, those friends that you knew back then, if you go check out their credit report now, it wasn't a myth. It was real. Those checks come due. We are going to find that out in a very real way next year, specifically with the New Orleans Saints and the Atlanta Falcons. the New Orleans Saints are $95 million over the salary cap. Drew Brees, who just broke ribs on both sides and had a punctured lung and has a contract waiting for him as an announcer, has a $35 million cap hit, and if he retires, a $29 million dead cap hit. So they're paying him $29 million on that cap next year if he doesn't play. The Falcons are $65 million over cap next year. People say, oh, well, you should trade Matt Ryan or Julio Jones. Matt Ryan has a $41 million dead cap hit. You can't do anything. So we are about to find out in a very real sense that the salary cap is real. Now, smart teams know how to adjust money, just like I ran through the options of restructuring contracts and things you can do. Teams can always kick cans down the road, and then when you don't see them get horribly penalized for it, it's because in a year where they would have had a bunch of money to go spend on free agents, they just soak it all up with restructuring to make up for the debts that they owed. And then you see it as, oh, they didn't get penalized, when really they didn't get to add any talent and that was the penalty. So that's where the idea of myth comes from, is that, you know, they always find a way to work their way out of it. But really, you have a lot of these teams that don't add any marquee talent for two off seasons in a row, but they have enough talent on the team that it's not noticeable.
So how should we feel, Greg? We had a good discussion here. We got into all kinds of stuff, really forecasting things. I certainly understand where the Bills are, where they're headed, what their options are. I asked you how you felt about this team, the version of it, what it can do this year. How do you generally feel about the resources and the sustainability and the makeup of everything when it comes to roster construction for next offseason and beyond?
So I think we should feel very good. A random aside, I've been having a lot of fun with a new app called The Locker Room. It's a locker room app. I've been playing around in there a fair amount. And through that, I had a good conversation last night with Jeff Darlington for ESPN, who covers Miami. And going through there, we were talking about who has the brighter future between the Dolphins and the Bills. And even though he covers the Dolphins, I think he said, I think people are getting ahead of themselves that just automatically the resources and assets Miami has means they have a brighter future. It might mean they have a higher ceiling on their future, but it doesn't mean those are all going to come through. We've seen tons of draft. He said, honestly, looking at the Dolphins draft class now, it's not a ton of grand slams. It's not a ton of huge hits on what they've done. Some of the signings have played well, but they're really highly paid. And he said some of those don't look like great values in what they've given up for those. He said now altogether, they had so many resources that the result has been good. So I have confidence that having a smart, aggressive GM like Brandon Bean with a really deep staff underneath him with Joe Shane, Dan Morgan, Malik Boyd, Lake Dawson, the really talented guys that are all through there, we should feel really, really good about their ability to retain the right guys, know the right guys to pay, and then fill in the blanks on the other spots and to find more Levi Wallace's and Dane Jackson's and other pieces like that to help fill in the game, and Darrell Williams and contracts like that. So I think fans should feel really good about the future, and that None of that is as important. All of that is half of it. The other half of it is we have Josh Allen now. Yeah. We have a franchise quarterback, and nothing is equal to that in all of the NFL. We have a franchise quarterback, and that means we're going to be fun for the next 10 to 15 years, and that's fantastic.
Well, there's going to be a lot of really interesting transactions coming in the offseason. Obviously, there's games to be played yet this year, and we've got to see where this team finishes. But if you guys want to understand things, Greg is always tweeting and letting us know. He gives us good perspective. So make sure that you're following Greg on Twitter at Greg Thompson. Make sure you subscribe to the Cover One Buffalo podcast. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can find that one. Hit the subscribe button, keep plugged into his work, and you will be a smarter Buffalo Bills fan for it. Greg, I really appreciate your time.
You're far too kind. I appreciate that very much, but I appreciate it and always fun talking to you.
All right, folks, that is going to do it for us today here on this podcast. It's Nate Geary. Tomorrow, he's going to talk Buffalo Bills offense with us. It's going to mirror, in a lot of ways, the conversation I had with Bruce Nolan on Tuesday. So we've had a really good week of guests. I hope you didn't miss any of them. If you have, shame on you. Go back and listen, because there's a lot of really good insight that has been delivered on the podcast this week. As always, I do kindly ask that you share, subscribe, rate, and review. and I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.